Do it again.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world.
You're listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.
Hey girl, a martini, shaken, not stirred.
Don't try and church it up, son.
You can't handle the truth.
I am big. The picture that got small.
Your first one's on us.
It's the corporate for one night.
Man.
South Dakotans.
Yeah. Do I have to wear these?
No.
Nobody likes wearing
them. Mark just thinks he looks cool. All right, let's
go. I feel like I'm flying a plane.
We're already wasting.
Welcome to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling. I'm your host, Mark Regadon.
Is it on?
With me, as always, Richie Byrne.
Soul Joel.
And now we have
our very special, another special guest.
Very special.
We've been very lucky the past few shows.
Yes. This is awesome because this is exactly what the show is.
Yes.
It's having a beer, telling a story with friends.
Yes.
And
we happen to call one friend who's here.
Who was having a beer when we called him.
And we said, where are you? And he said, drinking. And we were like, you're perfect for this. Michael Somerville, ladies and gentlemen. Come on.
Hey.
I went into warm-up guy mode there.
Come on. So today we had a very fun day.
We did.
We actually went, Joel and I drove up. You know,
yeah.
From Philly, it's a 15-minute
drive. 10-minute drive, hop and skip.
5 minutes, just 5 minutes, you're right in the city. So the 2-minute drive to get here, and we went and watched Richie do what Richie does best.
Oh, very cool, yeah.
Yeah, and it was fun, and at one point I introduced them to the crowd, and Dr. Oz said, well, if they're comics, make them sing for their supper.
Anna. Yeah, let him prove it.
But we didn't get any supper.
Yeah, well, you didn't deserve it.
Did you? Did you?
He and I go, Doc, it's not like, you know, it's not. He goes, no.
Are you serious?
Yeah, so
you made him get up
I gave Rick and Donna
like
the mic.
2 p.m.
And he sucked.
You ate it?
I sucked. He liked it.
Oz liked it. He did. But
I think he liked Mark's sound effects.
Mark did kind of you'd have to be at the show to understand the joke, but and it was a little bit.
I was doing in the moment stuff.
You were
about the show.
You were
riffing. Toilet humor, which half of our show is toilet humor, so that's what we do.
Yeah, I know. He did an episode on, like, looking at your turds and telling what's wrong.
We've done more than one episode, so. But it was a lot of fun. Doc got a kick out of it.
Sand was number 2.
Yeah. It was a real shitty joke, if you know what I mean.
Lady in front of us asked if Richie was really a comic and if you guys are really friends.
Right. I don't know why people do that. They always, you're like, oh, hey,
no, he's a cameraman who went rogue.
And after the show, they'll come up and go, are you really a comic?
Really?
No, I just say that because I want you to not show up.
Well, because Richie also joked around because he was busting on Dr. Oz that it was his last day. So please have fun on his behalf.
Because I make fun of Oz a lot.
Who's last day?
Me.
Oh.
In other words, I'm like, this could be my
last day. Oh, this is, I gotcha. Okay.
He's like, that guy looks really handsome, right? Oh, I'm a doctor. I'm a movie star. I'm a TV star.
So,
Rick Adon is not going to replace you, that's for sure.
Zing!
Richie goes,
prove that.
Richie goes, look at Dr. Oz adjusting his toupee, and all of a sudden he just fired a look up at you like, you son of a bitch.
But I do that every day, and your hairpiece is perfect. That's
what is it a hairpiece, though?
No.
I was like, that's what I thought.
How would it be funny if it was a hairpiece?
I don't know, but I thought
that
I was
dude
like.
Dude has the hairline of Wolverine.
Dude, he's got the most beautiful head of
hair. Well, and a photographic memory. I mean, the guy's perfect.
I know, hate him.
But the show's still clipping. That's been good for you, huh? That's a few years now, right? Season 9. Have you been the whole time?
Yeah.
Dude, that's fantastic.
I know.
Gets to stay in town.
When you're saying, hey, I got to get up and go to North Dakota, I go, you know what? I love that show. You know, you forget sometimes.
Do they still like go into like the 7 a.m. meetings or whatever you were going to? Remember?
Yeah.
I remember like years ago.
I got to be up at 4:30 in the morning.
Jeez.
As a matter of fact, Joey Cola, who got me the job, after you got other comics, like, dude, can you get me a job? Can you get me, you know? And Cole was like, just tell them they got to get up at 4:30 in the morning. And it's true. Like, half the comics go, I'm not doing that.
Oh, never mind.
Don't worry
about bedtime.
Yeah, I'll stay up. Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to bed.
Yeah, that's brutal.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. And we do, and we're there till like 4:30, 5 o'clock.
Wow.
Yeah,
so. 4 days a week?
Yeah, three.
3 days a week. Okay.
So, I catch a 6 o'clock train, and I'm usually not home till 7.
Wow,
it's a long day.
It is a long day, but hey,
they know.
I have two kids. I'd love that day.
Two shows,
3 days. So
six shows a week.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a healthy schedule. But like you say, you're in town, and you're like sleeping in your own bed.
I'm here tonight at the comic strip.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this, and I got to get up at 4:30.
Oof, man, oh, man.
Yeah, but, dude, it beats the alternative, right?
Yeah.
How many, when we were younger, starting out, how much would you be like, what a great life that must be?
Oh,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So now that you get a chance to do it, you
absolutely,
gotta do it.
No.
You know.
Jump on it, absolutely.
You know, Somerville's
ride it where you
got
can.
Got a lot going on in the career, man.
Yeah,
a
boy.
Lot going
just
on.
Brimming, drinking across the street.
Drinking across the street at 5 in the afternoon.
Hoping for a booking, which came through. Speaking of, there's another...
Oh, that's the business we call a segue, ladies and gentlemen.
For a booking which came through.
He just set himself up. Wow. That's just what this show's all about.
Yes. Speaking of, there's a kid over there. I don't remember his name, but he's a comic. He knows you. He says he lives 45 minutes north of you in Philly.
Mike D'Alto.
Yeah, he's over there sitting by himself, too. And he goes, we were joking about you because of the whole, like, hey, I'm in Philly. I'll be in New York in 10 minutes. He goes, yeah, Rick and Donna calls me. He's like, hey, why don't you come down? We'll drive up to New York together. He's like, I live 45 minutes north of you. I'm not going to drive an hour south to get to drive to. And I'm like, Rick and Donna just has this mentality that everything's 4 feet apart.
Everything's
and
close. Everything's
let me tell you someone better than that. Rick and Donna did a show for me about a year ago. It's down the Jersey Shore. We had an intern that's working for us and helping us out do the tech stuff for our podcast. He drives to Rick and Donna outside of Philly. They drive to the show, which was an hour and a half.
Right.
They pass by this kid's house. So the kid drove 45 minutes to Rick and Donna's house, an hour and a half to the gig, an hour and a half kid. The kid had to watch him at his house a second time on the way back because he would have got dropped off except his car's at Rick and Donna's. And he goes, I thought it would have been easier.
Wow. That's awful.
Hey, here's the thing. When you're the headliner, you're not driving to them.
That's right.
Mike lives 45 minutes away. Yes. And he never played anywhere away from that 45 minutes.
Right, right.
So he can drive to me if he wants to be on a show.
Right, right. Because you are the star.
I'm not driving 45 minutes out of the way to go pick up the opening act.
Because then you can't drink.
I wasn't doubting Magellan. I was just making. I was just trying to be funny.
Magellan shots.
I'm done.
He's good at certain things. Directions
alcohol
is not one of them.
So in all fairness here, in all fairness to Michael Somerville,
yeah,
we've had a few comics on the show. We hit them with, you know, we're going to tell stories, and we just grabbed you and threw you on. So
yeah.
We're kind of putting you on the spot here. But what were
Vegas.
We talking about?
Vegas.
We're
interesting twist on everybody's had their own twist on our business, and you found a little residency with Brad Garrett, an opening for him.
Yeah. Residency, kind of a strong word. I do.
Well, yeah, that's right. I thought it was in the theater, but it's in his comedy club. But
yeah, he's got his own club, so it's a year-round club like anywhere else.
And
part of the MGM.
You were saying he performs still at the club.
He does. Yeah, it's called the Brad Garrett's Comedy Club, MGM Grand. He does. It's, you know, regular 52-week a year club like any other place. He does about 2 weeks a month at his club, which is always an interesting thing because people, you know, you see the name and people think that he's going to be there every night. They buy tickets. You know how customers or audience.
Right,
don't listen.
Dangerfield. People still walk in going, is Rodney going to be here?
Yeah.
He's been dead for 10 years.
Exactly.
Before we get back to Brad, it's just on the Rodney Dangerfield note. We do a show once a year in Connecticut called Remembering Rodney. And it's about comedians who were inspired to become comedians because of Rodney Dangerfield.
Right.
So Andy Pitts, who's a friend of ours, did it the first
year.
That's
a great imitation.
The thing was, is he was going to go on first. And then go backstage, put on a suit with a red tie. And then at the very end, I was going to go, oh, my God, special guest just dropped in, folks, Rodney Dangerfield. And he was going to come up and do his Tonight Show set as Rodney Dangerfield, just as a fun little joke. He gets on stage, and this people in the front row are giving him the finger, yelling at him, and going, that's not really Rodney. That's not really Rodney.
Oh,
and we're like... Yeah, he's been dead for a while.
Are you serious?
And Andy's like, Andy had a little blow up and threw the microphone.
Did he really?
And stormed off stage yelling,
oh, God.
Fuck.
No.
Ew.
No, wait a minute.
Are you serious?
Was he still doing the Rodney voice? That would I'll tell you.
And the funniest, the funniest thing is Gary, the club owner, looks at me and goes, hey, should I go up? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, this isn't part of it, right? I'm like, no, no. Who am I, Andy Kaufman?
No, I was just going to say, it's remembering Rodney, not Andy.
He's doing a bit.
Oh, God.
That is. Does Andy know Andy would lose it like that? I don't picture that.
He's the cleanest, coolest guy.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he just snaps.
Yeah.
The Rodney in him came out.
Audiences are so crazy like that. I was in the Tropicana in Vegas once, and they had the poster. It was the old Comedy Stop at the Trop, and they had the poster, and it's got like Richard Pryor, all these, and the women were all excited going down. They go, "Ooh, do you think they're all gonna be here tonight?"
Yeah.
And it was like half of them were dead. It was Carlin, right. Pryor, yeah.
No, they're all showing.
Yeah, yeah, they're all gonna be there.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. It's yeah.
So you now
can I just buy the ticket now off the street team? I want to make sure I get in.
But you were saying that so Brad shows up. And he goes on first.
Yeah, he does. He'll do about 2 weeks a month. He hosts the night.
He'll host the night.
He's not the headliner. He's you know, an evening with Brad Garrett sort of feel.
Right.
But he'll get up and do like 40, 45.
Wow.
And just light the place on fire. I mean, everyone's there to see him. Everyone knows everybody loves Raymond. Even though his act is not quite, it's a little bit, you know.
Completely different. Right?
Yeah. It's
he's
very.
He's not that character.
No, he's not. But he's, you know, people love him. They want to see him. But he lights the place on fire for like 45. And then whoever's next is just in a rough spot.
It's been you.
I've done that spot. He does usually the two or three other comics, and doesn't matter, man. The first five or ten you're on stage after him, doesn't matter what. I've done my Letterman A jokes. You name it. Doesn't matter. They're just staring at you going, go away.
Makes you feel like an open micer.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, it doesn't
matter.
You try crowd work, you try anything you want. They just want their guy back. They paid to see the sitcom star. And
that's amazing.
Yeah.
And you would think, like, I think it's funny that, I guess just people are like that. I think it's funny, though, like, you go, hey, I'm going to see people I don't know tonight. That can be a cool thing, you know? But it's just like when you go see McCartney and he plays something new and you're like, come on, just play Let It Be.
Exactly.
Cut the crap. Now, I say that because I went to see McCartney last week at the National Coliseum. And he did a great thing because, you know, when you go, he actually sang a new song and everyone went to the bathroom.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But at one point, and he was amazing, 3 hours, just amazing show.
Is that right?
But at one point he gets behind the piano and he sits down and he goes, I want to tell you people something. He says, we know when you don't like a song. And he goes, I do Beatles songs and the place lights up, and cameras and everybody's jumping around. Then we do new stuff and it's like a black hole in here. He goes, but here's the thing.
He addressed it.
Yeah, he goes, here's the thing. We don't care. And I thought that was so cool. Oh, and then he went into a new song.
That's
like, you know,
great.
And I thought, and
he almost did the comic thing where, like, that joke was just for you.
Yeah.
This joke's just for me.
It reminded me so much of what we go through when, you know. Wasn't it Leonard Skinner, the Freebird thing, was they announced that this is your time to go to the bathroom?
Is that right?
Freebird. Because it's so long.
Right.
It's like you go to the bathroom, come back.
It's still going on.
Instead of announcing a bathroom break, we'll just play Freebird.
Although I would think that's everyone wants to hear it, though.
Now they do. I know what Leonard Skinner did was they went out, played for 45 minutes, and then brought up Somerville.
Yeah, I don't know what it's like to have these full rooms with people taking pictures. I've never heard of that.
Mike, when you're working... we're very good at segues.
Yeah, so...
Well, hold on, we'll let it die down. New topic, Mike.
Hey, back from commercial.
So when you first started working with Brad, I remember he was taking you out on the road.
Yeah.
And what was your first experience of going out on the road? I remember you telling me a great story about his jet.
Yeah, well, it wasn't his jet, but he the first gig he ever booked me for was up at Woodstock, New York. It was the night before Thanksgiving, and he had seen me in Vegas. He was looking for locations for his club. He saw me perform at the Trop. He liked me. He's like, would you like to open for me sometime? Absolutely.
Wow, that must have been cool.
It was really cool, and he calls me up. He's got this gig up Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and he calls me up, and he's like, you know, how you getting there? And I was like, oh, I was going to rent a car and drive. It's like an 8-hour drive or whatever. I was like, do you need a ride or what? And he goes, well, no, I'm taking a private jet. Would you like a ride? And I was like, oh, hell yeah. Yeah, coolest
day. That's so cool of him, too.
It was unbelievable. It was so, we met at the Teterboro Airport, you know, out in Jersey, little private airport, just got on the plane, no seat belts. It's like a case of beer.
That's where JFK Jr. left out of.
Is that right?
Yeah.
All right, well, I had more success on my trip. And we We landed, we flew like 45 minutes later. You land like a private airport up in Woodstock, and it was a limousine waiting on the runway. Like, it was just like the movies, you know.
God.
You get off the plane, into the limo, to the show, sold out theater, signed autographs. Well, he signed autographs, and right back to the limo, right back. And this is a true story. The best part about it, it was just this whirlwind. Like, we flew back the same night, landed at 1 in the morning. Teterboro's closed. It's like dark. It's, you know, private airport, no cabs, no nothing. He's got a car waiting for him and to take him into the city. He's going to watch the Thanksgiving parade with his parents, and he looks at me. He's like, you got a car coming. And I didn't have a car. I didn't even thought
you
that far ahead.
Car coming.
But I didn't want to ruin it. It was like the end of the perfect date. So I was like, yeah, don't worry. Go ahead. So I just watched him drive. I'm standing on the runway at the airport, and I just watched him drive away
with no way to get home.
No, but I just wanted the night to end perfectly. I wanted everything to be like, you know, just let me be. Yeah, you go. You go. He's like, you sure? I'm like, yeah, I'm good.
What'd you do?
I called my mom. She lived.
She lives in Indiana.
They live in New Jersey, so my mom picked me up.
Are you serious?
So I went from a private jet with a 3-time Emmy Award-winning sitcom
to
star
to
the
picking you
my
up
mom's
all
car.
In the same night.
Drove home, slept in my childhood bed, and I was like,
feet
"Well, there."
Hanging off the.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She made me a sandwich. It was wonderful.
Oh,
one sandwich.
I don't know this.
I don't know what it is.
My son has a Swedish accent. We can't figure it out.
Daddy, would you make me a one sandwich? Like, maybe if I talk this way, Daddy won't say no.
You know, he's got ABBA playing.
But what a roller coaster that this business is, right?
It sums it up.
I mean, that story was the highs and the lows in one night of the business.
All in 6 hours.
I'm taking a private jet.
Yeah.
I'm opening a big place for this big name.
Yeah.
And my mommy had to pick me up.
My mom picked me up and drove me home.
That doesn't explain this.
Yeah.
This
no, but I love how he said that I wanted the night to end perfectly.
Yeah.
Forget the fact that he was waiting with no backup plan.
Nothing. No. I just wanted him to think it was a success.
Why didn't you just, I'll get in the car with you. I mean, wasn't he
he was going. He was going to Manhattan to his hotel. No, I didn't even know him that well then. So it was like, you know, now I might be like, hey, can he help me out? But then it was like our first gig together.
Oh, because you didn't have anywhere to go in Manhattan.
No, I didn't. Good point.
Now I'm here. No metro card. No nothing.
Do you have a way to get home? No. Can you drive me to my mother's?
Yeah. Can you bring my mom's house?
Mom, Brad Garrett's outside. I gotta tip him.
No, I would have walked home. I mean, you just want that night to go well. It's like the end of the party. I was there. I did a good show for him.
Right.
Yeah.
At the time, I'm thinking that you had a place in Queens or Manhattan.
No, I do have a place, but I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, I was subletting at the time because I was traveling so much, so I couldn't go to my place.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't remember where I was sleeping those nights. But,
wow.
That's
crazy.
Yeah. It was. So he giveth and he taketh away. That's the business.
Yeah. So, but that's great that he has you doing this for him.
It's
you know?
So much fun, yeah. No,
it must be it. It must be a ball. So are his audiences cool that way? Are they cool? Like, are they cool? Because I know when I've opened for names, not huge names, but some audiences can be like, we're not here for you.
Yeah.
And other audiences, like I said on one of the pop, Brian Regan's audience, so cool.
I bet they are,
And Panette's audience was great.
Oh, they must have been amazing, yeah.
So they didn't care. It was like, hey, if Panette almost made them feel like, if he's opening for me, you're going to like it.
You're going to like
You know what I mean?
I found the opposite with Schimmel.
I
believe that.
They did not like me at all, and I literally had to tell them flat out, hey, I have to be up here for 15 more minutes.
I
got to
do this.
I don't even think Robert's here.
I don't
even.
This is how. Now, conversely, I've opened for Belzer, and they loved me and hated him.
Well, there goes us ever getting Richard Belzer on the podcast.
I don't know if he does this every show, but I had friends that saw him at the Brigada, and they loved the show. This is probably about almost 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And
Belzer?
I'm sorry. Brad Garrett. Back to our original topic. We diverted. So he says, he goes, oh, if you're here to see my character and everybody's love Raymond, you're going to be very disappointed.
That's exactly, yeah.
But he kind of lets them know right up front when he's on stage about to do his set.
Yeah, he does. He kind of makes a joke of it because they do. You get a lot of
people.
It's
almost like a Bob Saget kind of way.
It kind of is. I mean, you get all these people who, like, these older retired couples who watch Everybody Loves Raymond every single night, and then they come to the show thinking they're going to see, and he goes, where's Robert? You know, he does the whole thing, and it's not him. He jokes about it. He does a quick impression. He does a quick Raymond impression, but otherwise it's him talking about, you know, it's very 80s. Like, he cut his teeth in Vegas in the 80s. He won Star Search, like, in 1980 or 81.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, okay. And so he was opening for, like, Sammy Davis, Sinatra, all those guys.
Great.
Sinatra story's an awesome
story?
So that's why he went back to Vegas, too.
So he loved Vegas. He grew up in Southern California, always loved Vegas, cut his teeth there, so he always wanted to have a room there. And, like, old school, if you've ever seen the rooms, like, lounge, old school feel.
Yeah.
It's really nice. It's beautiful comedy room. Gorgeous, gorgeous room. Yeah, and he wanted to give, he's really cool, too, to, like, younger comics. He wanted to give back.
Yeah, help, Brett Druck.
Help comics.
There. He loved it.
You know, yeah, nice. Just the whole thing. So, yeah, he's genuinely one of the nicest people I've ever met in the business or out of the business. He really is a genuinely
Well, he was
person.
On the Dr. Oz show.
Oh, was he?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And I actually wrote you.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And I went up to him, and I just talked to Somerville, and he goes, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. And then when he was leaving, though, he said, hey, man, good job. I go, you too. And he goes, keep hitting them straight, or some golf term. Keep hitting them straight.
All right,
But I just thought it was so, like, it was such a nightclubby kind of thing to say. Like, you know, the Rat Pack might say to each other, I love this.
Yeah.
It's cool.
That's his vibe, man. That's exactly, He's got the green room's all just pictures of, like, you know, him with Frank, him with, like, all these guys. It's just a great, old Vegas. Yeah, Vegas doesn't exist anymore like that. But it's,
it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's sad. Nothing exists like that anymore, you know?
No, it's for damn sure.
That was a really cool time for entertainment.
Definitely.
And it's kind of gone.
Even Atlantic City had a bit of that to it back in the 70s and 80s.
And I mean, even on a different degree, but what the vibe was of the Catskills is gone.
Yeah, exactly.
It's gone.
Exactly.
It was a different vibe, but there was a comedy vibe in the 50s.
Definitely.
In the 40s, and it's gone.
Yeah.
It's not there anymore.
Yeah.
My first booking in Atlantic City was because of you.
Is that true?
Yeah, you got Letterman. And you had to leave, and you were working with Kevin and Dina.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, call Rick Adana in.
Perfect. I love it.
I came in, and then something happened with Dina, and I ended up staying the rest of the week.
Is that right?
With you.
Okay.
That's the first time you and I hung out.
Is that right? Okay.
Yep.
Great times. And I think of you for my very first Letterman because of Wildwood.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. When I was getting my first Letterman, and like it was almost happening. They're like, your set's approved, it's a matter of getting a date. And we were working at the Casbah Comedy Club in Wildwood, Tuck Tucks. And every single, I was trying to diet so hard. I was like working out. I was doing everything because I want to look good.
And then you found out you're working with Rick Adana.
And Rick Adana and I for the whole week. And that's all we would just say to each other. It would be like a text. We would just say Tuck Tucks because it was a place called like Tucker's Inn or something. And it was a pub down the street from the club. And every day it got earlier and earlier. The text would go out. Tuck Tuck. Originally it was like, should we go for one after? And then the next night it was like, let's go for one before. And then it was like 10 a.m.
Was like, I'm eating nothing but vegetables. I was going to, you know, thin out. I was going to feel great.
Yeah.
He did that to me.
I'm like, here's some
wings. That's right. At the Borgata.
We had a week. We spent a month, 1 week in Borgata.
Oh.
And we were, I mean, just debauchery.
Yeah.
And then.
Drinking, buffets.
I mean, my God.
Everything.
I wrote him about a show or something. And he, everybody's looking out the window. Stop looking out the window. So I wrote him about a show. I said, hey, man, I'm going to be in the city. Maybe we get together and get a drink. He goes, I gave up drinking for a year. I said, well, when's that year up? And he said, like, November 2nd. I go, I'll call you November 3rd.
November 3rd, exactly.
I want to hang out with Somerville and have coffee. That's what I want to do.
Well, it's so hard, man. I try to take breaks because it doesn't, like, I'm not, there's no balance with me, you know?
Right.
It's like all or nothing. You're going out. You're
that break's not today, my friend.
No. That is for damn sure, as I'm sweating out booze. No, but it's just one of those things, like, you got to pump the brakes. But in this business, it's always, every night, there's
something. You're always in a bar.
Always
in a restaurant.
Half the time it's free or someone's buying you or whatever.
There's where the big problem is because we get underpaid a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And then they tell you that you can drink for free.
Right.
Or eat
so
for
then
free,
you're
or
like,
both.
Well, and when they
and
say,
like, I'm
eat
taking
for free,
advantage
it's
of
fried,
all of this shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you go to take advantage of it. And even if you're like, I'll just have a couple, it never is a couple.
No. And you don't have to get up in the morning. At least I don't. You got family now. But I mean, I don't have to be up in the morning. I don't have to, you know. And even I just had my first physical today in like 10 years. I hadn't been in the doctor in like a decade. Yeah, because I have health insurance. So I'm like, I should probably go see if I'm still alive. You know?
Yeah.
And I go in, everything's perfect. 120 over 80, blood pressure, the whole thing. I was like, you're kidding me. Like, I was literally like, can you check it again?
She's
like,
bullshit. Yeah.
And even the doctor was mad. She was like, I wanted to.
Even the doctor.
Yeah. She's like,
that's hilarious.
She's like, I shouldn't say this as a doctor, but I was really wishing you had like high blood pressure or something so I could tell you got to lose weight and stuff. But she's like, you're perfect. I was like, this
now,
is amazing.
I had my blood pressure taken on the Chicago Good Morning America. So they're offshoot by Dr. Oz.
Uh-huh.
And it was...
You got some camera time?
Through the roof.
Are you serious?
And the funny thing is my... Yeah, my blood pressure is always like 130 over 80.
All maybe. Right.
And he couldn't wait to get me on camera and just berate me in front of... And then when they went back, we were at that event that I was telling you guys about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we were doing it, and he did my blood pressure, and he's just going off on me about it. And they cut back to the guy in the studio, and the guy's like... Wow, that guy's really in for a long time working for that. Wow, that was some bad numbers. Like, the newscaster's killing me now.
I've covered shootings. I've covered hurricanes. But this guy's blood pressure is fucking ridiculous.
So it was terrible.
It was terrible, and it's the only time it's been terrible.
Really?
And you're on live TV with Dr. Oz, the healthiest man in the world. Yeah, you're going to be a little bit... And he's like, no, this is bad. You're going to die.
I'm sure your anxiety...
I'm not going to die.
Your anxiety was probably through the roof as well.
Dude, yeah, we were in for a long day. I was hosting this show, this all-day event. And I might have had 5 or 6 doers the night before. And then got told. That was the worst one. Hey, tomorrow morning, you want to go on Good Morning America? Yeah, all right. We're going to do your blood pressure. Oh, great.
Fantastic.
Totally hungover.
I don't know if I could say this, but if not, I'll edit it out. Saturday night when I introduced him for our tour that we're doing, I said, you know, he does the warm-up for Dr. Oz. He comes out. He goes, yeah, that's who you want. The healthiest doctor in the world. You want the unhealthiest guy in the world to come out and get the crowd going.
It's like before, after.
Yeah.
Well, they're waiting for Richie to have a heart attack so Oz can come out and show him how it's done.
Yeah. One of the crowd members goes, look, your silhouette behind you is skinnier than you.
Yeah, it's fucking asshole. Yeah. So, let me ask you a question, seriously. Sorry. Enough about me. What was your first Letterman like? What was that? It that was the first Letterman.
So that was like a few weeks before we worked together in Wildwood. That was leading up to it. But yeah, it was August 2012, and it was the best thing ever. You grow up. I got older brothers, so as long as I can remember, Letterman's been on television at night. You know, he's the legend. He's the
How tight are you before that curtain opens? How tight?
Nervous?
Tight? Yeah.
Oh God, yeah. Because I ran the set probably 150-200 times, like just, you know, that 5 minutes to the point where, like, I was screwing it up. I think my opening joke was, I can't believe it's almost September. I think that's my first, and I was to the point where I was saying the wrong month during. I was like, I can't believe it's already February.
Yeah.
And everyone's looking at me like in regular comedy clubs, I'm running it.
Because you start psyching yourself out.
Start getting so, like, in your head, but you just want it to be perfect. It's like it's your first thing. You want to be perfect.
And it's Letterman.
You want it to be. I was so wound up. That's all I thought about. I obsessed over every word, every letter. I just, you know, day and night, it's all I did. I ran it ad nauseum in my own apartment, you know, just thousands of times, I'd say. Just nonstop. But then
now,
it worked.
Are they very involved in your act? Because I did Rosie O'Donnell's show.
Yeah.
And they pick it apart. I mean, they pick your act apart. And I've seen comics on TV before then, and I go, this guy's not even that good.
Yeah.
And then you see the guy in a club, you're like, this guy's amazing. And you realize, oh, they kind of destroyed it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Are they very... Are the Letterman people on you, or?
I was lucky. They were pretty loose. They had jokes they liked and jokes they didn't like, but they didn't mess with the actual jokes too much. They, you know, certain ones they liked, other ones they didn't. They tried to make me force something, and it didn't feel natural, and they actually listened to me in the end. I said, look, I got to be honest. It doesn't feel like it's flowing. I don't like it. It's not the way I normally do it. And they went with me then. They said, fine, if that's not feeling good. Yeah. So I really was fortunate, because I've heard those stories about, you know. They
and I'm not, listen.
Change a word, change
of
this.
Most of what Rosie's people were saying turned out to be right.
Okay.
And it was Jeanette Barber. Do you guys know Jeanette?
No.
She's a producer for Rosie, but she's a stand-up comic.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jeanette was like, you have to listen to me. And I was like, and I trusted her. But she also said, if you don't believe what you're saying, we'll fix it.
Okay.
But I want you to go out and I want you to believe what you're saying.
Well, what kind of stuff were they changing on you?
Very little, slight things, but things where you're going, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
But you realized that it had something to do with the movement, the feel of the TV show itself.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she kept saying, to this day, she's been great to me, Jeanette. She keeps saying, I knew you could handle it. I knew you could handle it. But I remember thinking, are all shows like this? And from what I understand, a lot of shows are.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they're really, you know. But I remember standing behind the curtain when I was about to get introduced. And all I kept thinking was, I can't feel my mouth. Like, I was dry.
Yeah.
And I looked over, and the guy who pulls the curtain so you could come out, goes like this. He had water. Just some tech guy. And I go, how'd you know I needed that? And he goes, it's my job to know. And I thought that was so cool.
That's the universe, man. That's really cool. I mean,
yeah, I thought that was so cool. And obviously, so many people have been behind that curtain going, oh, my God, I wish I had something to drink right now.
It's not his first night.
Yeah. And thank God it was vodka.
But now with Letterman, did you have to, like, submit the 4.5 or 5 minutes that you're going to do, and you had to stick to
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, with you know, messing up a word or two.
Yeah, no, like they approve, you know, because it goes through legal and all, you know, like you can't offend a brand, one of their advertisers, all that stuff. So, yeah, you do that set. You're supposed to do exactly that set.
And that's why you're running through it, like you said, in your living room.
Exactly. But it's funny because it's not even really stand-up anymore. It's at that point, it's a script or
that's
a speech.
Exactly
or
exactly how I
like,
felt.
Yeah, it's not like you're doing stand-up. Now it's just this, you know, here's the words. So you throw it out to the theater. It's a weird feeling.
Now a lot of the guys, like a tell, they'll go on the shows, but they don't even do it. They're sitting on the couch, but it's
feed
just
them their act. Yeah. Well, Bill Burr is the best at that, man. You ever see Burr like on Conan or something? And the way that he just, I mean, I've never seen someone get fed their act and do it so seamlessly and so smoothly.
Yeah,
it just looks like,
this guy's got charisma.
Yeah, exactly. He's just coming up with this stuff about Bill Gates. It's amazing. Off the top of his head.
I went to see Letterman live once, and Richard Lewis was the guest. And
Letterman, that must have been a hoot.
Letterman decided to fuck with him. So Letterman's going, it says here that you've been in therapy. And Richard Lewis goes, well, now that you said it says there, you know, what am I supposed to do with that? And it was the funniest thing because they went to commercial and Richard Lewis is sweating.
Is he?
And this is when Letterman still smoked. Letterman just pulled a cigar out of the drawer and he just turns around and you can see it was two friends.
I
he was
love
fucking.
It.
And Richard Lewis is so. And like a makeup girl comes over and she starts touching up Richard Lewis. And you see him talking to Letterman like, I can't. And Letterman's just smoking, like not paying attention. And then you see Richard Lewis like wave the girl away who's trying to do his makeup. It was so funny.
Was Richard Lewis pissed?
And he was like, no, he was Richard Lewis. Like, you know,
was, like
he was
entertainment.
Neurotic about it. I can't believe you did that to me. And you can see, and then they come back, and Letterman's like, we're back with Richard Lewis. And you can see Letterman was loving every minute of it. And he just kept, like, he'd like, look down at the card and then, like, say a line that he knew was actually the joke. Like, he was just messing with
That's
it. It was
great.
So funny to see.
What a perfect guy to do it. He was doing
it just for his own enjoyment. I guess as a comic, and I saw that, I knew what was happening.
Sure.
You know, it was cool. It was very cool. How many Lettermans did you do?
4, 8 if you count reruns.
Hilarious. Oh, God. So funny.
And in my apartment, infinity.
It's
on loop constantly.
Yes.
But no, I did 4 in his last 2 years. So it
yeah,
was
you were
a heck of a run.
You were hosting more than he was.
And I got to do the warm-up for a couple weeks, which was also cool.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. When Eddie Brill left, they were looking for a replacement, and I had just done the show. So they're like, do you want to try for a week or two? And
yeah, I remember because you called me for advice.
Yeah, I heard you broke your knee climbing up the stairs at Dr. Oz.
I was like, he's not the guy to answer.
Did you really?
Yeah. I tore my.
Richie, how do I ruin this?
Richie, what can I do to fuck my whole career up? Yeah, I did. Well, I tore my meniscus and I couldn't. That must have been when I worked with you, right? I was in so much pain for like 4 months and I was running up and down those stairs that you guys saw today and everything and with a torn meniscus because the doctor said, well, we got to repair it. And I said, I can't get it repaired while I'm doing the show.
You're going to be out.
I had to wait for the summer and man, that thing hurt, man.
So you were just doing it in pain.
Oh, oof. Boy, was I in pain. Wow. Yeah. You guys ready for
Were you still doing the stairs?
I actually fell because the knee locked.
It was the biggest laugh he got.
The stage manager caught me. I'll never forget him. Steve Van Patten, one of the best guys in the world. I'll never forget the look on his face. My fat ass coming down. He's like, holy shit.
Timber.
Yeah.
Timber. Yeah.
Well, speaking of timber, I think it's time we...
Yeah. Michael Somerville killing
it.
We're knocking it out of the park with the guests.
Oh,
he puts special in special guests.
He does.
Can I go back and finish my beer now?
We're well deserved.
We're going to repeat this podcast so you can say you did it twice.
Oh, fantastic. 2 credits.
Good night. Last call.
Thanks for listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.